moment, right?
Yes. Full capacity.
No, we're not even going to do that today.
Okay, great.
Okay, welcome to House Judiciary. It is 10 minutes after 1. Representative Coghill and Representative Samuels are meeting with Governor Palin. In attendance are Representative Holmes, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Ramris, Representative Lynn, and Representative Gruenberg, who is reinstalled into the Judiciary Committee. We are so happy to have you back, Representative Gruenberg.
I want to have a record, I'm no longer a guest.
I appreciate that. Saw how that frustrated you.
Chair, can you make your amendments?
He's on judiciary probationary. And then our prayers still go out for Mrs. Lynn, who we know that she is on your mind. We're going to take up two pieces of business today. We are first going to address HCR 21, which has been brought forward by Representative Stoltz, who is with us. And then we will take up House Bill 303. Representative Stoltz is... Oh, yes, please. It's nice to see you, Representative Stoltz. And also with us is in the room is Representative Newman. It's nice to see you, Representative Newman. HB 355 is also scheduled, but I don't expect that we will get to that today. So Brooke Miles and Margaret Patton Walsh, who are online for 355, I suggest that you check back in at late in the session, and that you likely can get on with other duties that you have today. With that, Representative Stoltz, welcome to House Judiciary. It's a privilege to have you before the committee, sir.
No, sir, the privilege is mine. Bill Stoltz, I represent the communities located within House District 16, and I represent the victims of crime throughout Alaska and henceforth. Why I brought this forward, and with my partner, I'm often a junior partner, depends on which bill we introduce, with Representative Samuels. Since our freshman year, we have taken upon the responsibility of enabling and enforcing the provisions of our constitutional amendment for rights of crime victims, which as their family. The resolution before you, some might refer to it as boilerplate, but for me, the language may be, but the issue isn't. It's one of constant vigilance to recognize Alaska's victims and to look at ways that we can strengthen their rights as guaranteed our Constitution, have the same vigilance that we have on enforcing other provisions of our Constitution. It's it has the normal flowery, colorful, descriptive languages in the whereases and the resolve.
May I interrupt you, Representative Stoltz? I just want to inform you that so far your testimony has been so compelling that it appears you've picked up 5 co-sponsors. It's been an unbelievable wall of compelling testimony full of conviction.
You still have more to go, though. They could still be removed.
And the longer you speak,
Representative Johansson's with us. Representative Johansson, it's not very likely that we'll get to 355 today, although it's scheduled, just so you can plan your day accordingly. But we're delighted to see her. You're welcome.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might continue?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I only spoke on a bill that I know there's overwhelming support, probably unanimous support, only because it's important to just to describe to everyone who might not have your collective passion and commitment to victims to describe the history of the issue ever so briefly. But that is the terminus of my overloquaciousness. Mm-hmm. So.
Is there any committee discussion on supporting National Crime Victims Rights Week? Brilliant, Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chairman, only second to your stewardship of this committee.
Thank you. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the House CR number 21-25-LS1424/A with individual recommendations.
Okay, without objection, HCR 21 passes from committee. Representative Stoltz, it's been a pleasure, an honor.
And I have an amendment.
It would have been a good one, I'm sure.
No.
Bye.
Thank you, nice to see you. Okay, now for the real entertainment. House Bill 303 is before us, Representative Newman. Who's going to help you today? Are you on your own?
Chair, I believe my staff is on the way.
Okay, Rex will be down to help you in a
little
bit.
I hope my staff is on the way.
We have, we're going to be, for the benefit of the committee, we're going to be working off of version K today. Representative Dahlstrom, would you introduce version K for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would be happy to move the CS4 House Bill Number 303-25-LS1183/K.
Object.
Okay, object.
Sure about the.
For the purpose of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have before us. We have, I don't think you need to object. I think it would just have version K before us.
We do, because otherwise they'd adopt it.
All right. Darn.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Grinberg.
Who do we thank for cookies? These are great.
Representative Grunberg, because of your fragile condition, that's your limit, first of all, is two. First of all.
I think.
Secondly, Emily is our baker.
Well, Emily.
Baking cookies
like
Monday, Wednesdays,
Emily
and Fridays. All right. All right, so we have before us version K, House Bill 303. This is a judiciary version with the help of the bill sponsor. We drafted a judiciary CS and the accompanying legal recommendation that went with it. Does everybody have the legal memo dated? Is that today's date? Is it dated?
Yes, it is.
February 13th, and it is addressed to the Judiciary Committee. All the members have
it. Is that the one from Teresa Bannister?
I think so. Is
yes,
that right?
That one you have?
Yes, okay. I do. Thank you.
Do you have a copy?
All right, and we just received that today around noon. Representative Newman, it is a privilege to have you before us. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Mark Newman. I represent District 15 in the Alaska State Legislature. Mr. Chair, this bill was brought to me by members of the outboard marine dealers, snowmobile dealers, and ATV dealers of Alaska, and it's the primary purpose of it was to try and get them on the same grounds as what currently we have in statute in Article 45 that deals with automobile manufacturers, where they have some protections. And I will say that this industry has tried to work as dealers to work with the manufacturers since 1976 to try and work out some of these issues, and they've never heard back from them. They've had multiple times where they have presented proposals. Those proposals they've been told that they were going to accept those proposals and work on them, but they never got a response back. And so what they did is they came to me to help with this. We can get it in statute. There's a lot of this. It's, again, just a duplication of what's already there for automobile dealers. Literally every outboard dealer, snowmobile dealer, and ATV dealer in the state, I believe, supports this. We've got letters of support from the Snowmobile Association, the Alaska Outdoor Council, and other outdoor groups, because those are the people who use this. This is a bill that's meant to help protect the consumer who walks in the door. And that's where we start and stop. And we will be here to answer questions. My staff is here. Mr. Chair, if you'd like to talk about any of the changes in the CS, he's willing, he's available to do that. We're here at answer any questions that you may have. Mr. Chair, if I may add, there was some questions brought up by Assistant Attorney General Sniffen. We worked diligently with Mr. Sniffen, myself, my staff, the manufacturer, the dealers, to work out any questions that he had. Several hours on that. It was a good discussion. And that discussion went both ways, where we took his recommendations. He had a better understanding of the bill. I think he's here to testify on that. So we worked very hard with the Attorney General's office to move forward on this, and I think that they are supportive of the bill now.
All right, let me, for the benefit of the committee before we proceed to to questions for the bill sponsor. We do have available as a resource Ed Sniffen from the Department of Law. We also have online to help us who wish to offer public testimony, Special Vehicle Institute of America, Marine Retail, National Marine, locally, meaning within the state of Alaska, Alaska Mine and Dive Supply. And then also Craig Compo is here from my hometown in Fairbanks with Compo's Marine. Rex Shattuck, we're happy to have you before the committee. It's a pleasure to work with you as always. Would you like to take us through the changes from the Labor and Commerce version to the Judiciary version that's before us now? Members have the explanation of changes from the 303, HB 303 version E is in ERIC to the version K. Do you have that document? It should be in your packets.
Probably.
We'll just take a minute to get there. Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very respectfully. This came through just a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to review the bill or any of the documents at all. I don't know how much you've done on the bill. I don't know anything about the bill. Rex and Craig visited with us briefly yesterday, but we didn't have anything. And if we could start from the beginning or wherever you feel comfortable, because I know bupkis about this.
All right. Representative Gruenberg, would you... at my own hazard, what would be the easiest way for you to learn about this bill? It's the first time that it's before this committee. We had a Labor and Commerce version, for your benefit, because you were absent. We had a Labor and Commerce version that was the only committee referral. It had some issues in Labor and Commerce, some constitutional issues, and some anti-competitive issues that Representative Newman addressed. It did pass out of the Labor and Commerce Committee. It received a judiciary referral. Since then, we had a scheduled hearing at the request of the bill sponsor. We waited until we had a CS that was prepared, and we now have memorandums from Department of Law and from Teresa Bannister. That kind of framed the issue for us, and we now have the bill before us today, and I've had I'm very mindful of the process and want to make sure that this is an undisturbed process, that this bill gets a good hearing today, and if it is the will of the committee by the end of this session today, that we would move it out of this committee. That is my intention, is to move it today. That being said, I hope it enjoys a very thorough vetting this afternoon, and so we have the option of either going through the bill as it is, or asking Rex Shattuck to take us through the changes that were made from the Labor and Commerce version,
whatever you wish,
to the Judiciary version today. Representative Newman, you're the bill sponsor. Where do you think is the best place for us to begin?
Mr. Chair, I think that we thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we could probably just go through the version changes. That will bring up to date issues that were brought up. You know, again, this bill has been around for quite a while. For people to look at, and now we can take a look at the changes. I hope to have a good, thorough discussion here today, and I do commit, you know, and I realize, too, that sometimes there's questions that come up after committee, and I have committed to Representative Holmes already, too, and Gruenberg, anybody who wants, you know, we always are willing to work with people a long way, because that's the process, and we still have the Senate to go through, and this is a 90-day session. Again, I think this... a good bill, and let's move forward on some of the changes if we can very quickly.
Okay. Rex, if you'll do that, I would direct the members to this document, which is the comparison of version E to version K. And do you want to try and take us through the bill that way, Rex, or would you rather just take us through the sectional analysis?
The sectional analysis, Chairman Remmers, Rex Shattuck, Staff Representative Mark Newman, thank you for the opportunity to try and help this process along and giving a little bit of better understanding as to the changes that have taken place so far. So that the committee knows, we have from the very beginning been very open, the sponsor has been very open to any conversations, any questions, anything that comes in along the way. Evidence of that would be our working with the legislative legal staff as well as working with the Attorney General, as they would be the ones that would be experts in this area more than us. There is a great collection of individuals here that can answer questions on any aspect of it.
Mr. You okay?
Between members of the dealers, the users, consumers, and I believe there's some representation from the manufacturers. Briefly, everything that you see, if you look at the document, explanations of changes to HB 303 version E. Version E was what our speculation was, that this new one would come out. Of course, it fooled us. Okay. There was not a version E. It is a It has been? Okay.
That came out of okay.
That's the Labor and Commerce CS.
Okay. We removed several sections that were duplications when there were language that was similar that talked about either a dealer engaging in the process or actually selling the product. We removed those sections at the advisement of both Ledge Legal and the Attorney General. Starting with item one on that explanation of changes, that's really what you see right there. We removed a section because there was some duplication of language.
Which section is this?
We could Mr. Chair, may
refer
I
refer to sections?
Section 4527.010 on page one of the of House Bill, what was version M, okay? We removed that section as it was duplication of language, and you now see a renumbering of the following sections, starting with, and the next item that we did was item 020, cancellation of non-renewal agreements.
Rex, hang on just 1 second, please. Representative Grunberg?
You said 010 is out because it's duplication. Where does the language currently appear, Mr. Shattuck?
On version M, conflict provisions,
Okay.
Formation of agreements, a manufacturer distributor may not coerce or attempt to coerce an authorized dealer exists in the UCC.
Oh, in the UCC.
Okay. There's language that addresses coercion. There's in that. So it was felt that that was not needed there.
And Sniffen agreed?
Most of these are in the advisement of Mr. Sniffen in terms of what we changed. They were done in concert with him.
Right. If I may for a second, this bill got a little bit sticky as it moved from LNC to judiciary. So what I want to do in the interest of full disclosure, but I'd like to do it rapidly because I don't want to spend too much time in the past. What I'd like to do is to go through the changes that were made to version E, which is not before us, and just note those rather quickly, just so you understand the significant changes that were made, and then have us in a forward motion go through the sectional analysis of version K, which is the bill before. So I don't want to get bogged down in the changes to – hang on a second. I see you. I don't want to get bogged down in the changes to version in the changes to version E. I just want to cover that so that the members understand what is what's going on, and then I want to go through the sectional analysis in version K, and then I'd like to move to the public testimony. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with that. I just want to be clear. I've got lots and lots of comments on version E is the only one we've had a chance to see, so it's important that I be able to take notes and so that I don't ask questions that in the effort of moving forward.
Okay.
I don't ask questions that are no longer relevant.
Understood. Okay, so Rex, you're taking us through the changes that we made to version E.
Item 2, section 27020. We changed to 90 days and removed just cause. That was language felt unnecessary. 90 days is an industry standard.
Okay.
Section 030, we deleted and we combined sections there. Basically, what we had was there was a need to consolidate that section. You had engaging in and actually selling, and the Department of Law said that's a duplication. We can merge those.
Okay.
120. We deleted section 2B. That basically said there was an action that needed to be taken by the dealers, and the Department of Law thought that that might involve antitrust, so we removed that. Basically, there is an advisement that takes place to the dealers, but there was nothing that prevents the manufacturer from moving forward. Section 230, we changed language in that. The language basically was to allow for a dealer to continue after the completion or termination of an agreement to service customers in that area so that they were not left without service. Manufacturer on 300, we deleted a complete...
Excuse me.
He was moving on to another section. I didn't quite follow the last one.
All right, Representative Holmes, you were referring to 120 or to 230?
230, and I believe we were jumping on to 300. I didn't quite get...
Will you go back to 230? What, do you have a question about 230, Representative
Holmes? I just didn't quite... got rapid at the end. I didn't catch what the change was.
Okay. In 230, there was an element that said a time certain when... the dealer would not be able to continue servicing his customers. That was felt to be a detriment to the customers. So what we did was we said, okay, there's a period of time until the manufacturer establishes a new dealer in that area to be able to service customers.
Okay, thank you. That's clear.
Okay. 300. We combined sections in the repurchase agreement. In 310, we lengthened the time of the agreements to 60 days for the response time. In 330, we changed the language to include the amount allowed by law, and the UCC has some addressing of what can be used or what can be. Can be
You okay?
I'm not keeping up. We're going. What I don't want to do, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I've got lots of changes and questions written here. In the interest of trying to save the committee time, I certainly don't want to ask these questions on sections that have already been changed. I know you guys have put a lot of work into this, and I don't want to waste your time or the committee's time asking questions on things that have been fixed. But we're going really quickly through a 15-page complex document. And I'm just not keeping up with what sections are being addressed.
Thank you. And to set you at ease, Representative Holmes, because we're going then to go forward on version mm-hmm. K, if any of the questions are redundant or aren't germane to the CS of version mm-hmm. K before us, no problem. I just want to make sure that we don't get mired down going over a previous version of a bill, because I don't think that that's a useful time in the committee. But I want to make sure that we are addressing a lot of the issues that came over in the initial memo that suggested there were some unconstitutional or anti-competitive things that were in the bill. So we want to demonstrate the bill sponsor's effort to remedy those. Mm-hmm. And then we are going to turn our scrutiny in its entirety toward version K. And nobody's going to get short-sheeted on bringing that appropriate scrutiny to version K. But if you could slow down just a little bit.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I thought we might be just going through briefly and then allow them to come back and ask questions
we're good.
On it. Okay. We're on section 410, defective products. Again, there was an effort to delete duplication and combine language that made a little bit more sense, recommended by
the Attorney General, and I hope that the Attorney General would be able to address some of these more in detail to answer any questions you have. Just trying to give you a quick overview.
Appreciate that.
And 410, so that deals with the defective parts and adjusting time. And then Section 820 deals with civil penalties, and on the recommendation of the Attorney General, we put language in there to clarify what those fines could be for not meeting those schedules. Those were the there were a number of, Mr. Chair, there were a number of issues that were discussed that all kind of combined and got taken care of in these few changes.
So, if I may, the policy debate that's before us is whether we want to move and or amend the K version of House Bill 303. The question that I have for the bill sponsor, for Representative Newman, is, do you feel that the changes that were made in working with the Department of Law, going from version E to the CS that's before us now, address, in your opinion, the issues that were raised that were found to be either unconstitutional or anti-competitive? Do you feel that we have a bill before us now that is ready to be taken up and discussed by the members of the Judiciary Committee, and that those issues have been addressed, and now we will decide and shape the bill? Do you feel comfortable that we've addressed those issues that were raised by the Department of Law?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do. And that goes to the conversations, and I am ready to, if we want to go back on some of these, to talk about the discussions that happened.
I do not.
Why they happened. So,
I do not.
Yes, I
My intention is to move forward on version K, so my question is pretty explicit.
Yes.
Have we addressed those letters? Thank you. Okay. All right. Then we have version K before us. Representative Holmes, I would encourage you to roll up your sleeves and to do as much cutting and slicing and dicing and questioning as you see fit. Representative Grunberg.
Just so that there's no question, I assume that was whether we still have any objections on version K. And if that is the question, I remove my objection.
Thank you.
I thought I had the objection.
You did have the objection. Thank you. All right, so the objection is maintained.
If we, I'm happy if the committee would prefer to work off the K version, I would be willing at this point to remove my objection and move forward on the K version.
Thank you.
That was my intent.
Thank you. So the objection has been lifted. We have the K version before us. Thank you very much. All right, so what I'd like to do now is have you take us through the sectional analysis, and then move to committee discussion, and if it would be helpful.
Do we have another document called sectional analysis here?
I believe so.
It's fine, yes, is it? That's it, it must be in here somewhere. Oh, okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. I apologize for not.
No problem. All right. Rex, are you going to take us through the sectional analysis?
Mr. Chairman, I can do that. We also have Ledge Legal and Ed Sniffen to address out of that as well.
I have a question. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah. To save a little bit of time, it would help me as we go through each section if you could entertain questions, because I do have a question that Mr. Shattuck has briefly addressed, and if we can let either him or Mr. Sniffen or alleged counsel, who I assume is Terry Bannister,
yes,
whoever answers is okay with me. I don't care who answers. My first question is, and I guess it may be to Mr. Sniffen, where Section 010 was deleted because something apparently is in the UCC. I'd like to know what section of the UCC he's referring to. I happen to have Title 45 here. I want to look and make certain that's correct.
Representative Grunberg.
I think Representative Newman was going to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is covered in document came from this Mr. Tiffin. It is covered in Alaska Statute 5.45.700.
$45,700.
And Mr. Stiffen's recommendation was to delete this, and so that's what we did.
Ah, okay, that's called coercion of dealer, and it says a distributor may not coerce or attempt to coerce a dealer. And I just would have one question of Mr. Sniffen or somebody.
Mr. Sniffen, do we have you on the line?
Yes, Chairman Rammes, thank you.
Thank you. It is a privilege to have you before the committee. We all hold you in very high regard, Mr. Sniffen. And can I just say, can I just say on behalf of the House Judiciary Committee that we have enjoyed and continue to enjoy an excellent confidence in your professional abilities, and we are very happy to have your assistance and your point of view before us, and have you before us today. Welcome, Mr. Sniffen.
Well, thank you, and thank you for those very kind words.
If I may inquire.
You will, and we also, just if I may,
of course.
Terry Bannister, are you with us?
Yes, I am here.
All right, Terry, and we thank you also for your effort to get this drafted and before the committee today in a timely fashion. We know it's a little bit of a cumbersome bill, and there's a great deal of pressure on you, and we thank you also for getting this to us so that we could take up this issue today. So with that, Representative Gruenberg, go ahead.
Yes, I'm looking at the $45,700 that Representative Newman has just referenced, and it says a distributor may not coerce or attempt to coerce a dealer. I want to protect the dealers here. The term distributor is defined in 45-45-790 as a person who enters into a distributorship agreement. Now, my question to you is, if you have a manufacturer and they have a separate corporation that is the distributor, what is there in this statute that would prohibit the manufacturer from doing the coercion? I think this may be too narrowly drafted to really protect the dealer, and I'm wondering how we can be sure that the term distributor encompasses anybody as well as the person who actually enters into the dealership agreement.
Before, Mr. Sniffen, before you answer that, are you asking about something that was in version E that was taken out?
Yeah. But this is important because we've got to be sure that this thing isn't too narrow. I want to protect the dealer here.
Understood. But you're asking about something that's not in the bill before us.
I want to be sure that, because I might make an amendment to put something back in here. Please.
All right, understood.
Mr. Ed, do you understand my question, sir?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I do understand your question. I think I do have the answer to that. If you look in the definitional section under 45-45-790, a distributor is defined to mean a wholesaler, a manufacturer, or a person that is a parent corporation or an affiliated corporation of either of those. So I believe the language is broad enough in 45-45-700 to encompass agreements between manufacturers and dealerships.
My question is whether...
Hang on a second, Representative Gruenberg.
Excuse me.
Terry, did you want to weigh in?
I would have to say I have not looked at this issue because I consider that a totally separate chapter. I just knew it was out. And I would have to say it should be examined because I think within all the definitions, we may not have it applying. I mean, even if manufacturer or distributor is used, it may not apply to the products in the new chapter.
Mr. Chair, yes. And we can reserve a final answer on this, but I want to be sure, the way I read the definition, Mr. Chair and everybody, is that it would apply to a manufacturer, but only if that manufacturer actually entered into a distributorship agreement. You could have a manufacturer who didn't,
okay,
and they could do all kinds of coercion, and I want to be sure these guys who are local Alaskans are protected.
Okay, at the appropriate time, can we take that up?
Absolutely.
Okay, done. Please continue.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're so happy to have you back, Representative Gruenberg. Make us think outside of the box. No.
On my part, I'm sorry if I talk.
Rex? I'm sorry, who's taking us through the sectional?
We were walking through the sectional,
okay.
Mr. Chairman. Section 45-27-10 prohibits a manufacturer or distributor from threatening to cancel. That's what we were just talking about, was the coercion element. There was a discussion in Labor and Commerce, as well as from both the Attorney General and the and our legal Ledge Legal folks, and we felt that having that language in there and knowing what was over in the UCC,
yes,
well defined.
Okay.
020 prohibits a manufacturer from unreasonably withholding consent. Again, a coercion element that we were concerned about, and represented possible ways to deal with that in 220. I'm not sure what level you want to go to in terms of discussing each of these, Mr. Chair. Just breeze through them like that. And
yes, please, and members will flag you as they have questions.
All right. And 330.
Representative Gruenberg.
Just to, through the chair, Mr. Shattuck.
Yes, sir.
The level that I'm interested in is if you think there's, I'm satisfied with what you've said, but if there's something you think is important to add, I'd like him to feel comfortable.
I think my interest, Representative Gruenberg, so that we get square here, is to cover the sectional analysis with a minimum of debate so that we can frame the bill, mm-hmm, get the public testimony in so that we understand what the people that are actually on the ground with grease under their fingernails think about the subject matter, and then have a very vibrant debate. So if you could try and move through the sectional analysis within about the next 15 minutes would be great, because we have a lot of ground that we would like to yet cover. Is that acceptable? Is the format? Okay.
Chairman, 030 prohibits manufacturer distributor from changing agreement without giving reasonable notice. An item that was of concern to the dealers. We move into Article 2, 4527-100. If I might just backtrack real quick, Mr. Chairman,
certainly,
one of the things that's worth noting is that Section 4527 is a new section. A lot of the language that's in here or intent in here comes out of Section 4525, which deals with automotives. So we're adding a new section, and we're separating basically these new items or these items into their own section because these are items that are transportation issues in Alaska and standalone as far as we were concerned. Okay, Article 2, 100. This indicates that this is an issue that deals with geographic areas. We looked at what you see in the automotive industry and try to overlay that into this industry, which is slightly different costs in vehicles. You find these dealerships in maybe lower population areas. So basically what we tried to do was strike a balance and find some way of establishing what were reasonable territories without intruding on the manufacturer and the dealer's contracts. 110.
Mr. Chairman, before we move.
Representative Holmes.
A little bit of confusion. I thought we just discussed in our first run through the bill that we'd eliminated Section B2, but I see Section B2 in the version K as well, and I had a note that we'd eliminated that section.
There is some, through the chair, Representative Holmes, I'm not sure where you're looking.
Oh, sorry, that's B2. Okay, I got confused on the first run through. I have the note in the wrong place. We were going pretty fast.
There was some renumbering, and we tried to be as diligent as possible.
I think it's B2 was under Section 120 and not under Section 100. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
We're good.
Section 110 refers to the manufacturer distributor giving notice to in the periods of time for before changing the areas of responsibilities and 120. Prohibits a manufacturer distributor from entering into agreement adding a dealer within an existing area of responsibility without giving some sort of notice to the existing dealers in that area, noting that most of these we're talking about same line issues, so same product, same line issues. Alaska's a little unique, and I think you'll find hear testimony on that a lot of these dealers have multiple products, and competition was an issue that was brought up as far as antitrust. We think that these deal with that when you recognize those elements.
Okay.
Article 3, 200. This prohibits a manufacturer or distributor from selling or shipping products to a dealer before there are agreements made. I think that's pretty self-evident.
Okay.
explanatory generic. 210, prohibit to manufacture distribute from coercing a dealer. And as we've already spoke about that, I'll move on to 220. 220, prohibit to manufacture distributor from without just cause from refusing to deliver or ship within certain times to a dealer product publicly advertised. The industry expressed some concern that having the product before advertising is an issue here in Alaska, and I think we find that in a lot of different areas, not just in this line. 230 requires the manufacturer distributor to continue for a specific time after termination or non-renewal of an agreement to sell the dealer parts. That's probably unique here in Alaska because we have an awful lot of remote areas, and in the time of getting those products to them, servicing the product, the customer after those agreements are terminated between the dealer and the manufacturer. Consumer protection in that area. 240 prohibits a manufacturer distributor from delaying, refusing, or failing to deliver reasonable quantities of products, and dealing in reasonable quantities with the dealerships in the relationship between them and the manufacturer. 250 prohibits a manufacturer distributor from refusing to allow a dealer to select a method and carrier because we're unique in Alaska in terms of the distance from the manufacturers. Has to be some recognition that the dealers may be more experienced in this particular area than the manufacturers. 260 makes the manufacturer distributor solely responsible for the product damage. This is an area that that we might have the dealers and the legal folks talk more to you about than I. Article 4, 300 requires the manufacturer distributor to repurchase certain products. I think Article 4 probably is the one area that we'll have discussion as it did in Labor and Commerce, repurchasing of products. And the dealers are much better able to kind of enlighten you in some of the issues that they have there as well as manufacturers. 310 requires a manufacturer distributor to make repurchase within a certain period of time. One of the things to remember about repurchasing agreements as far as the repurchasing in Alaska, an awful lot of these products don't leave the state after agreements have been changed. They are recirculated within the local distributors. 320 allows the dealer to retain some of the discontinued product, again, servicing customers. 330 requires the manufacturer distributor to pay the dealer's interest if the manufacturer or distributor fails. I'll let the legal discussion take place on. Okay. 340 basis is repurchase amounts on the dealer's landed costs. There's a discussion that can take place on that as to a policy column. What's better used? Landed is what we put there. 350 places the responsibility for transportation and storage costs of repurchased products on the manufacturer or distributor. 400 requires the manufacturer to provide a product's ultimate purchaser from a deliverer the manufacturer's standard warranty. It's a warranty aspect. The federal government requires that the dealers pass on a warranty to the customer at the time of purchase. Sometimes that's not in hand, so what we've tried to do is ensure that there is that link that the manufacturer has to provide a warranty to the dealer so that the dealer can provide it to the customer.
Yes, Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's necessary. If you feel it's necessary, we can go through these each by each, but I think members can probably read these if you just want to. I mean, that way I can just kind of explain that a lot of these are just requirements between the dealer and the manufacturer, and probably some of the dealers can better explain if there's questions on that. But I don't know if you feel we need to read each one of these individually, we will, but I think we can go a little faster than that.
Would you like to take us through the remainder of the bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just in Article 4, you know, that's dealing with the product replacement requirements. And again, we're trying to make sure that when you have replacement parts that are coming in, or when they get shipped back to the dealer, and that's what a lot of these deal with. You know, if there's a manufacturer sends out a product and it's broken, how does that get replaced? and get back in there, and just whose responsibility that lies on. And that's what Article 4 kind of covers, is those product requirement and placements. And as the chair so noted, duly noted, some of the guys with the grease under their fingers can tell you exactly how that works. Getting into Article 6 that provides dealers and liability to manufacturers. This is with competing dealers and spaces like that. Again, I think a lot of these questions, you know, when you talk to the guys with the grease under their fingers, can tell you exactly how those work. Article 7 is the agreement provisions. And again, this is what helps kind of put the teeth into what we're trying to do here as far as penalties. And again, that just falls back more or less what's in line with Article 45 already with the automobile dealers, and the same with Article 8.
Representative Newman, I think we might have skipped Article 5. I'm not sure if it was in the sectional.
I'm sorry.
We've been joined by Representative Coghill and Representative Samuels. Pleasure to see you, gentlemen. We did move HCR 21 out. Representative Stoltz's testimony was so compelling, he picked up five co-sponsors as he spoke. It was a moving experience. Representative Newman, if you want to just verbally take us through what's in Article 5, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 5 has to deal with defective parts and the return of those defective parts. And again, we tried to look at what happens in Alaska and the realistic part of Alaska, the distribution system and how that works. We are a little bit different here, and so that's kind of what we did is look at both sides of the issue. And we did take concerns from the manufacturers and distributors into this, because you can't just put the same way all the time. We looked at a little bit on that. And, you know, specific question to any article like that, certainly the dealers can explain that.
Okay. For the benefit of Representative Coghill and Representative Samuels, because the committee is aware of some of the unconstitutional and anti-competitive issues that were raised with House Bill 303, as it was assigned to Judiciary Committee referral as it moved from the Labor and Commerce Committee. We initially, very briefly, went through changes that were made from version E, which was the Labor and Commerce version, to version K, which has now been adopted and is before us. We now were being taken through a brief sectional in K with a limited amount of committee discussions so that we can proceed to some testimony and then to a vibrant discussion over the merits of the bill. Representative Newman, is there more?
No, Mr. Chair, that's pretty much the articles there. And again, I'd like to refer a lot of the questions. They're very technical, just to the people who deal with it. They're greasing their fingers, as you say. And to Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Mr. Sniffen, have we addressed a lot of the concerns that were in the Labor and Commerce version? Do you feel that we have a bill that before us now meets the standards, that we've resolved the constitutional issues, the broad constitutional issues, and we now have before us a policy discussion?
Chairman Ramirez, Ed Sniffen here with the Department of Law. And I want to say thank you to Representative Newman and his staff for working with me on resolving a lot of those issues. And a lot of the changes that Rex and Representative Newman have mentioned did come at my suggestion. And I think they do alleviate a lot of the problems we saw in the first bill. There were some areas in this bill that I had suggested we deleted. And then after conversing with some of the dealers on those issues, they became less of a concern. I think the department neither supports or opposes this bill, but I can't pinpoint any particular provision here that we haven't addressed that would cause me too much concern. Of course, we always have some concern with legislation that attempts to restrict manufacturers and dealers from doing whatever it is they want to do. We like to see the marketplace control those things. I think a lot of things in the bill, the K version here, are directed towards some good consumer protection. Some other provisions, as Terry Banister pointed out in her memo, may still run into a few constitutional snags. We just haven't had a chance to ferret out how that might play out in this bill, but I will have to rely on some of the dealers and the manufacturers to explain the impacts some of these restrictions might have on their relationships, because, you know, frankly, we're just not experts in that industry, and how those agreements work, what the agreements normally require, what kinds of restrictions on territory are normally imposed in those agreements. A lot of those questions will help put us at ease, or the answers to those questions might help put us at ease to some of the real-world impacts that this might have. So I'm happy to answer questions as the committee members go through this bill on any particular section that we've worked on. I believe a lot of those questions might be policy questions, as you've mentioned, Chairman Ramirez. To the extent there are legal questions, I'm happy to address those.
Thank you, Mr. Sniff, and if you'll stand by. All right, so if I may, I found that when we were in Labor Commerce and we were doing the Capstone Avionics Bill, which you spoke about on the floor, Representative Samuels, that it was one thing to have DOT talk about the intent, and it was another thing altogether to have the aviation people come in the room and talk about, okay, here's how we have to implement it, here's how we get the equipment into the aircraft, and here's how we do it. And so what I'd like to do is to hold questions for the bill sponsor, because I think we could very quickly get immersed into 1,000 questions on House Bill 303. And I'd like to bring Mr. Compo up for public testimony, and then go through some of the other folks that have signed up off-net to offer testimony, and then we can come back to the bill sponsor. Craig, would you like to come up, introduce yourself for the record? And before you do, just in the interest of ethics and disclosure, not only is Craig from my community, Fairbanks, but I have bought a boat from him. I have a 1995 and a 98 Sea-Doo that I had repaired multiple times, and never my fault, never. Not the dealer fault necessarily, but not necessarily the operator fault. Just operator bad luck, which is an entirely different issue. So with that, Craig, you're welcome. If you'd introduce yourself and your affiliation before the committee, please.
Thank you, Chairman Ramirez. Chairman Ramirez, committee members, for the record, I'm Craig Compo from Fairbanks, Alaska. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of House Bill 303 today. My family's operated Compos since 1945. We're a fourth-generation family business in Fairbanks. We sell boats, snow machines, four-wheelers, and outboard motors. Our customers are primarily from the interior and many bush communities. In the past 64 years, we've seen manufacturers and dealers come and go. We've also seen vast differences in how some of the manufacturers treat their dealers and the end consumers of their products. Some manufacturers are pretty honorable and conduct their business in a way that builds trust with consumers. Others, let's say, are less than honorable and less interested in the customer satisfaction than they are in the interest in short-term profit at the expense of the consumers. House Bill 303 is a bill that levels the playing field, and it helps those manufacturers who need guidance in playing fair, a playbook to go by. Boats, snow machines, four-wheelers, they're commonly referred to as recreational products. In Alaska, many communities rely on these vehicles as their primary means of daily transportation. They're used to go to the store, they use them to take kids to school. They use them to subsistence hunt and fish, to provide search and rescue, and many other transportation requirements that we take for granted. It's no wonder why every state in the union has passed laws to protect dealers and consumers from abuses from giant automobile manufacturers, in the same manner that House Bill 303 protects dealers and consumers from the manufacture of recreational vehicles. I'm new to the legislative process, and I've never testified on anything like this before. I wasn't sure whether the manufacturers would oppose this bill, but watching how much opposition has been quite eye-opening. The power and influence they're able to muster by sheer size and their economic power and clout, you've seen that, and that's why this bill is important to help small business. House Bill 303 places safeguards that ensure manufacturers with significant power over dealers and consumers do not use that power to take unfair advantage in their business dealings. Nothing in HB 303 protects me from the impacts of my bad of bad business decisions or bad business practices. Those are on me. A manufacturer can drop a dealer for just cause if they don't operate within the guidelines of the agreement between the dealer and the manufacturer. What House Bill 303 does ensure is that manufacturers don't act arbitrarily or in bad faith. House Bill 303 will add to the list of states that have enacted similar protection, including Missouri, Georgia, California, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Texas, and New York. House Bill 303 will help dealers and consumers around the state of Alaska, from Ketchikan to Barrow, from Nome to Tok, and from everywhere Alaskans use boats, snow machines, and four-wheelers. And that's pretty much the entire state. Thank you for your time here today. I have a much better appreciation for the effort you all put in as legislators, and I want to thank you for doing what's right for Alaskans.
Thank you, Mr. Compo, for your testimony. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Coghill.
Madam Chair, I'm quite sympathetic to the bill, and I want to see it go forward. So outside of the interest that we had on the legal side, just on the practical side, when you're presented with a contract to sell a piece of equipment, you pick up their warranty work, and a lot of this has to deal with making sure that you're protected in warranty work. That's a contract, and one of the criticisms I hear of this whole bill is, why should the state get between you and a contract that you signed? So help me understand a little bit of why the protection of a small business has to happen when you actually are signing on to an agreement.
Sure. Well, one of the provisions in the House bill is that the manufacturers treat the dealers fairly when it comes to warranty reimbursement. For years, we've seen this happen. We sell their products that there is a warranty on. Unfortunately, the reimbursement rates are extremely questionable. And in the bush, there's a lot of additional expenses that the dealers incur because they don't cover, and they, even in this bill, they won't cover the transportation back and forth to a small community into the dealership. We absorb those. The problem is, Representative Coghill, is that for the most part, if the dealers are working at a loss, basically, when they're doing warranty work, it's hurting the consumer because the dealer, we have to pass that cost on. And so while we aren't asking for anything that would be considered unfair, we just want fair compensation because we are obligated by the contract to do the warranty work, and we want to do the warranty work. We just don't want to do it at a loss.
Madam Chair,
follow it.
I understand that this law is going to give you legal tools to say to the manufacturers, we have recourse. We're going to charge you with breaching this law. What do you have now that's available to you? It's a breach of contract in many cases, or is it?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, are you speaking if we refuse to do the work?
Yeah. For example, if they say that it isn't within warrantable items, but they make you pick up some of the cost of shipping, or they send you, maybe the issue is they only allow you so much time to charge against that warranty or things like that, but you've agreed to do that, so what's your remedy now is what I'm getting at. This gives you a lot of remedy because there's tight timelines, and things like that, and I'm just trying to get an idea of practically how that's working now to give me some comfort level, because as a businessman, I understand there's bad business manufacturers and there's bad business dealers.
Right.
And there's good business manufacturers and there's a good business small dealer. So I'm trying to figure out what the tools we're implementing here.
One of the provisions in that, one of the benefits of HB 303 being enacted is that the manufacturers would have to pay the dealers 1 hour administration charge for the warranty. And that's going to help. That isn't in effect right now. One of the reasons that's necessary is because sometimes a warranty claim is only 0.3 hours, which is 20 minutes. It's very difficult to get the product in your shop, thaw it out, diagnose, and do all the paperwork, track the reimbursement. In fact, it's impossible in 20 minutes. That's supposed to cover everything. So while we don't argue necessarily, we don't want to argue flat rate, we don't agree with it necessarily, but we feel there needs to be some method to have the dealer offset those costs, which this bill would do.
And Madam Chair, I guess probably because being raised in Nenana, where many times I could buy a new piece of equipment, no matter what the warranty said, I was not going to get that thing fixed by anybody but if I fixed it myself.
Yeah.
And at sometimes at great cost. So I'm sympathetic to that. And I'm sympathetic to the flat rate issue because manufacturers, they know it only takes 20 minutes to do something on an assembly line, they can put that in their flat rate book. I understand that part. I'm looking at how do you, it seems to me like right now you can take them on maybe contractually or even put pressure on them on their marketing. But here you're going to have good legal tools where you can get a lawyer. But the practical side of this is you are going to have a lawyer to make these tools work. So even though the law says you could do all these things, I just wonder what the practical use of this is going to be to you, except for maybe a really egregious manufacturer. I don't see. So help me understand, you know, these are good tools, but how often do you think they'll be used?
Well, Representative Coghill, through the chair, I think one of the benefits will be that these manufacturers, that especially the ones that have had a history of some production of defective product, it's going to cause them to pay a little more attention to quality control, and we don't want to hire a lawyer. We want to see higher quality product, fewer warranty, so that the dealer and the consumer specifically can do what they bought these recreational products for, and that's to go out and enjoy them. And so I don't see that this is just a safeguard for the dealers in the case when there is poor quality distributors. Many of these manufacturers are not going to be affected by this very much. This is for the ones that really either pay very poorly or build a lot of defective product.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me. I just was trying to get an idea of how they might use it, what tools they had available to them now. I don't know that I totally got an answer on that. Because sometimes when you read the language in here, you're going, whoa. But then when you realize the actual cost of implementing, then all of a sudden it balances out, I think. So,
Representative Grunberg and then Representative Lynn.
I don't know this is for Mr. Compo. It may be for Mr. Sniffen and Ms. Bannister, if I may have a little leeway. Madam Chair, co-chair, vice chair, sorry.
We're together.
I know. Good. I want to go back to what I think is one of the most important provisions in the bill, and that's Section 1. I mean, and using that as a template. Title 45 is a very, very complex title. It covers first the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, and then also relevant in Chapter 45, we have motor vehicle warranties, regulation of motor vehicle repairs, distributorships, and maybe other articles that relate to this whole subject. We have at least one provision in Section 1 that resolves one conflict of laws issue, and that is the conflict between this new chapter and AS 45.25, which is the article that deals with motor vehicle transactions, and 45.25 is another potential conflict. Conflict of laws is a very complex subject and troubles judges a lot. And the question is going to be, which of these various state laws applies? And I can see a court saying, well, you enacted Section 1, which only resolves one conflict and makes this new law trump the motor vehicle transaction. But with all of these others, which one applies? And if you don't have a protection that's in the UCCJA in here, does that mean they don't get the protection? Does the UCC, the Uniform Child, Commercial Code. Do we need, and I'm asking Ms. Bannister and Mr. Sniffen, do we need to have other sections put in the bill that resolve these conflict of laws issues?
Ms. Bannister?
This is Terry Bannister. As far, it probably would be a good idea to pull in a statement about the article dealing with 45.45.700, that one through .790, to say which chapter governs if there's a conflict. We've already handled the one for 45.25, saying that this new chapter would govern. So I think it's a good idea to have something that says which one governs if there's a conflict.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up, please. The UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, has all kinds of provisions under sales, warranty sections and things like that. I would appreciate it if we could have legal counsel look at all of these potential conflicts and resolve them, or we're going to have some sharp lawyer, not just a divorce lawyer like me, but some sharp lawyer.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Representative.
Say, there's no protection here. This covers not the UCC, but I want to avoid them being able to skate out if that's our attempt to protect these people here. And all I can see is this thing is rife with potential conflicts and would like her to take a little longer look and protect the bill.
Yes, the bill sponsor and then Representative Lynch.
If I may, Mr. Chair, address that issue through the Chair, Representative Groomberg. You know, if you look on page 1, lines 5 and 6, it says conflicting provisions. If a provision in this chapter conflicts with provisions in AS 4527, and that's all of Section 1, provisions in 4527 governs, and that's already in statute. So if anything in Article 1, if there's a conflict there, it falls back in Article 4527 governs, is what it says on line 6.
If I may respond. That is only, Representative Newman, that only covers one chapter, 4525. 4525 is a chapter that deals solely with, quote, motor vehicle transactions. It does not deal with distributorships, which are in 4527, whatever the number on that is. It doesn't cover some of these others. It just covers the one instance. And I want to resolve this with all of these other chapters. Do the same thing to resolve that issue. And I think that's quite important.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's what it does. When we go through this bill, it does address Chapter 27 and what's there and what's not there. It changes it. And it's already there in the section. So I guess if you have questions on it, you can ask legal. I understand where you're going.
Thank you. Mr. Compo, thank you for being here. Do you have any other comments you wish to make, or were you allowed to finish your testimony?
I'm complete. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for being here. Oh, I apologize. Representative Lynn.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for coming here today. As a practical matter, how big a problem is it? I assume it must be a big problem, or we wouldn't be discussing this bill. And secondly, maybe more importantly, what if we were to pass this bill in some reasonable form, what detrimental effects might we have to manufacturers wanting to do business in Alaska or to open new dealerships and so on? If I decide I wanted to open a dealership, competition with you, whatever, might they not want to do business up here anymore?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, that's a good question. And I would let you know that the other seven states that have had legislation passed that are almost identical to this, and there'll be testimony today that there's been no negative effect. The manufacturers haven't closed shop and left. Things are actually better, and it's better for the consumers in Louisiana, New York, and many of these other states. That they had the same concerns initially, but what's happened is these manufacturers, as a result of this legislation, have not left the state, and they haven't chased off dealers, and they haven't quit selling product in those areas. So I don't see any negative impact. It certainly may cost the manufacturers a little more money to do business, but to me it's an incentive for them to build a little better quality product, and then we don't have these issues where the dealer is burdened with the warranty costs, the consumer is burdened with a motor that won't run, and a dealer that doesn't want to work on it because the warranty reimbursement rate is poor. So to answer your question.
And then.
Follow up?
Yes. So then why aren't all the manufacturers backing this bill?
Well, I think
at least some of them.
Yeah. Again, some of the manufacturers do a good job, and we're really the bill is really aimed at those that don't. You know, those that pay half of what your normal labor rate is to repair a boat. Those that that when they build a defective product, they run the other way.
And so you're inferring that those who don't back the bill are those who are not doing a good job.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll have Representative Coghill and then Representative Holmes.
And this is for Mr. Compo as well. What is the regular recurring cycle for dealership contracts? Do you go through an annual, a lifetime, a five-year, what?
It varies. Most of them are annual. We go to our annual dealer meeting, sign an annual dealer contract. I believe in the boat industry, some are 2 years or 3 years, but typically it's 1 year.
Thank you.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, sorry. Two questions for you. Oh. I'm trying to keep it to questions then for you. There's a section in this bill that talks about areas, distributorship areas, and sort of who gets what. The way I've been reading this, and I apologize if this is one of the changes that was made, all my notes are on the old version, and so let me know when I'm addressing something that's already been fixed. But I read this to say that in some areas, for instance, Anchorage, which is my hometown, you might only have one dealer in all of Anchorage under this. Is that how are things working now in terms of numbers of dealers of different products within certain geographic areas? Is this sort of codifying what's already happening, or would this language really change what's happening?
Yeah, the language doesn't really change what's happening right now as far as the territorial limitations. That's really driven by the demand as well. The manufacturer, if they set too many dealers up in one area, they know it's not good for the end product. Sure, it works great short term. They dump a lot of product, but they have very dissatisfied dealers, and typically the quality of the dealership goes down. So the territorial limitations are very similar to what they were before this bill and after. There's not much for change there.
So if I may follow up, Madam Chair.
Sure.
So this is basically what you see happening, and you're just trying to codify it, to put it into statute, what you see happening?
That's correct.
But if for some reason this weren't in here, it's not something, there's not a problem right now that you see that we're addressing. Is that correct?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, historically there's been many cases where manufacturers dumped four dealers on four corners of a block, and most of them didn't survive. And so this is only really codifying the territorial definitions that are out there now.
Okay. Thank you. And I had one
follow-up.
Actually, an additional question.
Sure.
In another section of the bill, we're talking about reimbursement rates. Mm-hmm. To the dealers from the manufacturers, and it says that that they will be reimbursed at I think 1.5 times the landed cost.
That sounds better.
Is that correct? I don't know. Maybe Representative Newman can help me figure out. I'm flipping around sections, trying to figure out where that was. I just had that a minute ago. I'm just trying to figure out why it'd be page 7 of the new bill. Thank you, sir. I'm just trying to get a handle on why. If that's the right number, page 7 of the K version, is that correct? Ooh, I don't see 1.5 times.
Amen, Jim.
Yeah.
Representative Newman.
What we did on that landed cost is we referred back to Mr. Sniffen's referral, and at least in the old bill, his opinion was that this section is retained, the rate of 1.5% a month is a fraction of is a month, and replaced with the amount allowed by law. So what they did is his recommendation, why he did that, because it would make it consistent with section 45.45.010.
Actually, follow up. Sorry, Representative Newman. I think we're actually talking about different sections. I think you're talking about, is that the section 45.27.330? Is that the one you're referring to? I think I was actually referring to a different section. I'm just trying to. I was looking at 4527440D. I don't know what page that's on in the new bill.
Page 8.
Page 8. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Coco. Where it says that a manufacturer or distributor shall reimburse the authorized dealer for product parts at the current manufacturer's full suggested retail price and shall ship each part to the authorized dealer without cost for freight or handling. If a manufacturer's full suggested retail price does not exist, the reimbursement shall be calculated 1.5 times the authorized dealer's landed cost. Just trying to get a handle on what that means and whether that's the right language to have in.
Representative Holmes, through the chair, it's very unusual they don't have a suggested price on a part. It could be a very recent add-on, a modification or something. That language is there just for that reason. If there's no way to establish a part, then you would take that the dealer's price and put a multiple on it. There is I can't think of the last time we've had a part that didn't have it. It may be in a product line we don't sell. But
okay.
Follow up.
And at the full suggested retail price, is that how you're being reimbursed now, or is this a change?
No, we're being reimbursed closer to the actual dealer cost with a small multiple on that. The problem with that scenario is that we're typically the dealers have to do warranty work, a lot of it in lieu of the customer that's standing there that is ready to pay full retail on parts and get their motor in and out. So, in effect, we're chasing high profit business away to work on low or no profit business.
So if I may, the difference is to sort of account for that.
That's correct. To bring it to a little more level playing field.
Thank you. I understand that better now.
All right. Thank you. I thought the standard rule of thumb was the smaller the part, the more expensive it was.
Smaller box.
Right. Boat, what is it? Bring out another 1,000?
Right.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you all for your time.
Next, we have Kathy Van Kleck. Are you online, Kathy?
Yes, I am.
And I have, could you state your name and your affiliation, and then we'd like to hear your testimony, please?
Sure. Thank you very much for the opportunity to provide comments today. My name is Kathy Van Kleek, and I'm the Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the Specialty Vehicle Institute of America. And SVIA is the National Trade Association representing manufacturers and distributors of ATVs. We've just been made aware of the committee substitute in the earlier discussions, so we haven't had, obviously, a chance to review it at all and would certainly like to have the opportunity to do so, and would really appreciate if the committee could hold this bill so that we would have an opportunity to take a look at the substitute. And I'm not sure that now my comments are going to be exactly applicable to the substitute, but I'm going to carry on based on the bill as it existed prior to the substitute, if you would indulge me. I know last week the hearing had been postponed to give the proponents of the bill adequate time to review the comments. So, again, I'm sorry if some of my comments don't address things that are in this committee substitute. But SVIA opposes this legislation as overreaching and simply bad public policy. We think it would have a negative impact not only on ATV manufacturers and distributors, but probably more importantly to the committee on Alaska consumers. The other 7 states that were referenced to have legislation almost identical to this perhaps are boat laws. I don't believe there's any other state that has an ATV law with some of the egregious provisions that are in this bill. We have numerous concerns regarding a number of provisions, but in the interest of time, I'm only going to highlight a few and note that we believe all of these issues are more appropriately addressed between the individual manufacturers and their dealers rather than by statute. We've never been contacted to discuss these issues earlier. It was said that dealers have been trying to discuss these issues since 1976, but in fact, the ATV industry really didn't even start until the early 1980s, and we were established in 1983, and to my knowledge, have never been approached to discuss any of these. The issues involve competitive considerations. The majority of our dealerships are multi-brand dealers, and every dealer signs an agreement with its manufacturer, clearly stating forth the terms to which the dealer and the manufacturer agree. And we would welcome the opportunity to discuss specific concerns with the dealers, should they indeed be ATV-related. The bill mandates very lengthy notice periods before a dealer can be terminated, so that materially underperforming dealers will be allowed to continue with seriously deficient behavior for an overly long period of time, causing high levels of customer dissatisfaction, costing a large amount of money in sales revenue, and unreasonably raising business costs. But even more egregious, the bill provides that the manufacturer must continue to provide the dealer with parts for 2 years after termination, and allow any dealer who discontinues business to retain discontinued products and parts, effectively ensuring that the underperforming or non-performing dealer continues to represent our brand names. Our dealerships are full-line dealerships designed to both sell and service our products and provide our customers with the highest quality experience in terms of product choice, after-sale service, and customer support. Providing product sale from part sale and enabling dealers to provide one of these vital functions, but not the other, is unacceptable. It'll enable unfair competition, cause customer confusion, have a negative impact on the permanent investment of our full-line vehicle dealers. And parts represent a significant profit center for our dealers, who make a sizable permanent investment in their facility, in their inventory and staffing. So if you end up with a parts-only dealer, it could and likely would capture the lucrative profit opportunity using little or no permanent investment. The parts could even be sold online where no facility or customer interface is required. So allowing terminated dealers to continue to engage in the sale of parts undercuts all our valued dealers in Alaska who are carrying a full line of products and parts and providing quality service to the customer. The legislation, all of our manufacturers, we believe, reasonably reimburse dealers for the required warranty service that they provide. While each manufacturer does establish its own reimbursement rates, which are agreed upon by the dealer in its agreement, the ATV industry generally reimburses dealers at its posted retail rate for warranty and recall work, and at least the dealer cost for parts, plus a 10% markup, and many times even a higher markup, depending on the certified technicians and the certification of its service personnel. However, not only does this bill require warranty service to be reimbursed at the dealer rate, but in addition requires reimbursement of yet the additional hour at retail rate and an additional markup of 25% of the dealer's normal handling fee for shipping a part placed under warranty that the dealer returns. The mandate of a 30-day time limit for providing warranty parts and requiring the manufacturer to provide an identical replacement product or full refund to the dealer if this time limit is not met for any reason is seriously flawed. Obviously, we strive to make parts for warranty repairs available as quickly as possible, but I'm aware of no state law that mandates this requirement, and especially in Alaska, where transport is at times more time-consuming, an absolute time by which a repair part must be supplied to the dealer is not only extremely problematic, but unreasonable. The overriding objective of warranty repair and recall is customer safety. Curing a defect may involve re-engineering and manufacture in addition to distribution, and these functions can't be rushed to meet an unrealistic deadline.
Kathy, are you almost? Can I give you two
more
minutes?
Paragraph.
All right, thank you.
A law such as this would disproportionately protect poorly performing dealers that aren't providing adequate level of sales and service to customers in Alaska. It hurts both the brand name and our consumers and results in higher operation costs and increased litigation costs, which only lead to higher products for consumers. as stated, there are not problems with many of the manufacturers, but regulating dealerships in this manner will only serve to increase the cost of doing business for all, reduce consumer choice, decrease competition, and ultimately increase the cost of recreational products to Alaskans. Thank you very much for your attention.
Kathy, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate you waiting online. Representative Newman has a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just less than 1 minute to respond. If you look at the Marine Rehabilitators Association in your packet, it talks about the dates and when they have tried to work with those people. It also states, and I'm going to read here, I'm very pleased to report MRA has not received any loss, sort of any loss of business. Actually, the contrary, what many boat manufacturers saw when else the dealers in those areas invest in new facilities and hire new employees because long-term legal agreements have given them some security. We see dealers increasing inventory, there's less cancellations, and happier consumers. That goes to as far as, well, we're going to see less dealers in the state. They have not seen that. As far as termination of continued parts, what that has to do with this is protecting people. If a dealer loses his dealership and you bought a snowmobile and it's still under warranty, they can keep those warranty parts so they can still repair your snow machine. They can still retain that after 24 months. If they cannot sell or find another place for those, then they can still continue to service your vehicle as a warranty dealer if they've got the warranty parts. That's to protect the consumer. On replacement rates, it goes back to what Representative Cogula alluded to. What they didn't say is that they're required to keep these replacement parts on their shelf for up to 90 days, and they're required to ship them back to the dealer at the dealer's cost. So this works both ways, so that you don't have a dealer who's trying to put the screws to a manufacturer, overcharging them maybe 3 hours, on which the dealer or manufacturer may say it only takes an hour, which it does take more than that, quite frankly, on most items, I think, is it just says, well, you get to get 1 hour administrative fees, and if they ship it back, then there's a 25% increase on that. They'll cover their cost of dealing that and the cost of shipping and the cost of storage it on their space. All space is time. Dealer returns, again, I just mentioned that, the five with the time limits for warranty and customer safety. Absolutely, they need some time limits. What happens is if you buy a snow machine and there's a warranty on it, you come back to the dealer and say, when is this warranty going to, when can you get my part? And this just says they need to be able to tell the customer, you're going to have your warranty part at this date. And that's only fair to the consumer. They should be able to know that. And the manufacturer should be able to tell them, this is one that's going to be having that part. We'll get it to the manufacturer around this date. And we realize that there's problems there. And I could go on, but I'll just stop now.
Oh, that's good. And Representative Gruenberg, did I see a question from you? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Van Cleek, you have provided in apparently a written document or an outline in front of you there a series of problems you saw with a previous version of the bill. It would help me, and I'm sure other members of the committee, if you and your staff could look at the latest version of the bill, which we're just, it's a work draft that's labeled 25LS1183/K as in kilo.
And sure, would like to do that and are sorry that we weren't able to get a hold of the committee substitute.
And that might eliminate some of your concerns or it might raise others. And it would help me if we could get a written document from you as quickly as possible, keying your comments and number them, please, and key them to the page and line number that you're concerned about. And then we can look at them, or that some legislative body, if it's out of this committee, can look at them and see what you're saying and give the dealer association and Representative Newman and his staff a chance to respond so we can have a side-by-side.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Kathy, may we have a fax number for you, please?
Sure. Right now?
Please.
703-416-2269.
Thank you. The next person is called...
Madam Chair, just one thing.
Follow-up?
Yeah. It's if you can do that, I can't respond. You just went too fast, and that'll help me at least know what you're talking about.
Thank you. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is a question in response to what we just heard. It's not necessarily for the person testifying, but
okay.
I thought we heard something about questions about where this language came from and whether other states have similar bills, and that's actually a question that I had when I read it. I'm just wondering if bill sponsor or somebody else could address whether this language was drafted here internally or whether we took this from another jurisdiction and what other jurisdictions might have similar bills.
Can I ask that we hold that and we'll finish.
Just didn't want to forget.
Right. Write a note, please, so that we don't forget that, because we definitely need to come back to that. I'd like to hear everybody that's been waiting patiently online. And the next person who is online is Paul Vetrano. I hope I haven't massacred your name, and I understand that you're affiliated with the same association as Kathy. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And is your testimony different than that of which we just heard from Kathy?
Yes, it is, and I'll be very brief.
Alrighty, please state your name and affiliation, and it's your turn.
Thank you. My name is Paul Vetrano. I'm the Executive Vice President and General Counsel of SVIA. And prior to the last hearing date, I was prepared to address some of the industry's legal concerns with the version of the bill then at issue. And many of those concerns were addressed also in Mr. Sniffen's February 6, 2008 letter to Representative Newman. At this point, like Ms. Van Cleek, I must apologize because I have not had the opportunity to review the committee substitute and look forward to the opportunity to do that promptly and provide written comments along with Ms. Van Cleek.
So I will. Is the same fax number applicable for you also?
Yes, ma'am.
Alrighty, go ahead.
I will briefly raise some of the issues that appear to remain based on the description of the committee substitute provided earlier. First, as noted in Mr. Sniffen's February 6th letter, several provisions of HB 303 address obligations, conduct, and remedies in conjunction with sales transactions between dealers and manufacturers. Those provisions are not necessary because Alaska has adopted the Uniform Commercial Code, which already addresses the same subjects. Second, Section 45.27.410 would restrictively mandate the response by manufacturers and distributors to defects. HB 303's approach is inconsistent with the Consumer Product Safety Act's regulatory scheme.
Yeah.
The applicable CPSA regulations provide manufacturers and distributors the option of submitting to the Consumer Product Safety Commission a corrective action plan outlining remedial action to protect the public from substantial product hazards. The regulations specifically require, quote, a statement of the action which will be undertaken to correct product units in the distribution chain, including a timetable and specific information about the number and location of such units, close quote. Recognizing that appropriate and efficient responses depend on the particular circumstances, CPSA regulations permit manufacturers and distributors to develop a flexible, situation-specific response for units within the distribution chain, and that response shall be approved by CPSC. H303's mandating of an unreasonably short initial response time and punitive remedies for a late initial response is inconsistent with the letter and spirit of the CPSA regulatory scheme. HB 303, Section 45.25.410 also is problematic because it is vague and overly broad. The term defective is undefined in the bill, and since it is undefined, could be interpreted to encompass significantly more products than those are considered substantial product hazards under the CPSA. It's incongruous for state law to provide for onerous and restrictive responses in connection with all defects, while federal law provides for a flexible situation-specific response in connection with potentially dangerous defects. Third, Section 45.27.600 would exempt dealers from paying manufacturers and distributors money revealed by audit to be due and owing if the underlying transaction occurred more than 2 years prior to the beginning of an audit. That provision would create a special statute of limitations without justification.
Rex, no, let's go.
Alaska Statute Section 09-10-053 provides a 3-year statute of limitations for express or implied contractual claims. HB 303 would alter established Alaska law regarding the contractual limitations periods for a single class of claimant, that is, manufacturers and distributors.
Can I ask you to finish up your testimony, please?
Yes, ma'am. There's no need or justification for such unique and discriminatory treatment. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Gruenberg? And yes. Just so you know, I have his fax number, and we will be faxing him the same thing.
I would just ask Mr. Vetrano that when you revise your written testimony and send it in, that you again key each comment to the page and line number or section number that you're discussing, so that in the latest version we know what you're talking about. You went over a lot of very important legal issues, and I want to be sure that we can look at them. And I hope that Ms. Bannister and Mr. Sniffen are listening in too, because you've raised other issues of potential conflict with federal law and supremacy issues that we'll have to take a look at, both from a policy and a legal point of view, the legislature will.
Thank you. Representative Samuels.
Thank you. Before we run out of time, I've got a question, I think, for Mr. Compo and the bill sponsor, if I could. I'm just trying to get to the fundamental problem here. I'm getting down, forget the words on a page here. And quite frankly, the comfort of me as the state of Alaska reaching into private contract negotiations makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But when you become a dealer and you are a Yamaha dealer, Yamaha, the manufacturer, has a standard contract for dealers that they submit. Is that true?
Yes.
I mean, you as a dealer sign that thing? So I guess the fundamental problem would be the situation in Alaska, because of our geography, is not the same as the situation in Wyoming. So you have more expenses going out and back that standard contract doesn't address. Is that the fundamental problem here?
For the record, this is Craig Compo. Representative Samuels for the through the chair. Yes.
Is there of all, and I'll pick on Yamaha, I've got one. Is there a Yamaha Dealers Association? I mean, is there a way to address this more from saying we're different, we're not Wyoming and we're not Montana, we are different in Alaska because of the geography? Because it seems there's a lot of things in here where you start reaching into other areas where you're getting, like I said, I'm going to reach into your contract negotiations and pick your side on some things, and the next guy, the next bill that comes forward, he's going to be on the other side, and you're not going to like that.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, is there a different way to look at the problem? If that's the fundamental issue, it's probably snow machines and four-wheelers. It's not too much boats, I'm assuming.
Well,
on the warranty on the motor on my snow machine, it's out in the middle of nowhere. You have to ship a guy out there. It takes you 6 months to get reimbursed for your money, and you get shorted.
Representative Samuels, through the chair, that the Yamaha was a good example you used. There is a Marine Dealers Association that we're members of, and we brought these issues up time and time again, and we do also at our dealer meetings and our deal, and typically have been given lip service. They'll look at it. That's why we're here now. Nobody's looking at it. So
thank you. As long as I understand the fundamental issue, although I have to tell you, and I've not said it quite this bluntly to the bill sponsor, but I'm comfortable getting into the middle of contract, not negotiations, but in reality, you're getting in the middle of some contracts between two private enterprises, and I'm a better businessman than I'm a politician. I've got contracts where I'm on the short end of the stick every time, and I've got contracts where I'm the big guy, and I'm on the, I'm the one with the big hammer. I've been on both sides, and I know it feels unfair when I get stuck to by, I'm in the aviation business. I get it stuck to me all the time by the aircraft manufacturer. I mean, they've got the part that I need. They charge whatever I want.
Madam Chair.
So quick follow-up, and then we have got four more people online to testify in 10 minutes.
My apologies. I just wanted to get
that's fine.
Big picture thing out there.
Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, just in response to Representative Samuels, this is legislation that's already in law for automobile dealers. We're just trying to level the playing field for us. This has already gone through, vetted through a process for automobile dealers, and we're just trying to put it over to another industry in the state.
Thank you. Larry Innes, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are.
Hi, welcome to our committee. Thank you for your patience. And
thank you.
Identify yourself and your affiliation.
My name is Larry Innes. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Marine Retailers Association of America. And MRAA strongly supports House Bill 303. We are the National Trade Association representing the small businesses, the dealers, the marinas, the marine retail stores in recreational boating. We work closely with many marine trade associations at the state, federal, regional level. We were founded 35 years ago, and I believe we've been referenced several times because as early as in 1976, MRAA first proposed specific changes and revisions to dealer agreements. We've been working since then with manufacturers to try to make these changes. We've received virtually no response to our request in 1976. So in 1996, that's 20 years later, we decided to write a second version of our improvements in our dealer agreements. We went through the same process of communications with the manufacturers and, again, received no response. In 2002, as I go through the history, I'm going to try to give a little history. My testimony is a history in the background of where this is. In 2002, responding to our membership, we began to develop specific language for a model bill. The process was intended to be used as a basis for enactment in state legislation. And it, in fact, has been used so far in Missouri, Georgia, and in New York. And there are now seven states that have dealer model legislation in place, Louisiana, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan, Georgia, and New York. And I'm very pleased to report that contrary to what many boat manufacturers have thought, the dealers in those states are investing in new facilities and they're hiring new employees. They see the long-term legal agreements giving them some security. Bankers see that they get security from these agreements. And we see dealers increase in inventories wherever they can, based upon, obviously, the economy at the time. And but most importantly, we also see customers who are happier because they're getting service on their boats. In the past, dealers were reimbursed at a perhaps 50% rate of the posted labor rate, a reduced part rate reimbursement. And so in the queue, they would look at a customer who is paying full shop rate versus a customer who's paying a reduced shop rate, and perhaps they didn't sell the boat. And so there was no way to even apply profit to the warranty claim. But they want to maintain a good customer relationship, so the dealer was put in a very tight situation. And then in 2004, the manufacturers, the National Marine Manufacturers Association, put together a special task force of 12 dealers and 12 manufacturers. They worked for many months on a project to draft another new model agreement that contained about 10 sections, and many of the sections that are been addressed in House Bill in 303. At the time, about 60 manufacturers made promises to honor the agreement, but in actuality, the long history of the broken promises remains, and we believe only one manufacturer has signed up with that model agreement that the dealers and manufacturers had put together in 2004. House Bill 303 addresses many concerns expressed by dealers to the history of the issue, and including the fair and timely payment of warranty claims, which is very important, two-year product buybacks due to manufacturer cancellations for no cause, assurances of some territorial rights and long-term security of longer-term contracts. The dealer ability to cancel a manufacturer is a right also of any small business, just like it is with the manufacturers, and we have not seen any abuse of that in the states. The dealers develop a reputation with customers, with the community, and they want to maintain that and enhance that and improve that. Also, we see that there are many common provisions in your bill, as there are in the other seven states that have dealer bills. But I fear that, once again, the 35-plus years of frustration continues. It's clear to MRAA that dealers have been misled, and their only alternative is to find protection and the fair treatment they deserve in a business relationship they have with their manufacturers by a legislative answer. To conclude, we applaud the work of your committee and the Alaska House, and especially Representative Mark Newman, the primary sponsor of House Bill 303. So thank you for allowing us to testify. That concludes my testimony. Again, we are in strong support of the bill.
Larry, thank you so much again for your patience and for your testimony. Next in line to testify is David Dickerson. David, could you identify your name and affiliation, please?
Yes, ma'am. My name is David Dickerson. I'm the Director of State Government Affairs for the National Marine Manufacturers Association. And while history is history, I can tell you that Mr. Ennis's discussion, I think, gives short shrift to the progress that's been made through this task force. There's been far more than one brand that has adopted these plans, and it is, I think, also the fair market and the open market at work, and that we have seen a tremendous number of the elements within that dealer agreement adopted. And his claims are that every single word of the agreement must be adopted in order for him to certify it as being compliant. And I would say that the free market has shown that a tremendous number of those have been adopted by more than 100 brands. And so I think it's unfair to have had that thrown out in that way. However, I wanted to bring up three things, despite the fact that, and I'd be glad to give a fax number as well. This bill does not cover in any way reimbursement for travel to an off-site location to provide warranty service. Simply doesn't do it. If the warranty request is approved, and that approval already covers, does the warranty policy says you have to bring that machine in to get it repaired, just as it is in a automobile dealership or anything else. Nobody gets in the car and drives or hops in a snow machine and drives out to where your pickup truck is in order to fix it. So I think another thing in specific, there were 354 warranty requests on Mercury engines last year. There were only three requests for distance travel. Each of those three were approved, and they were approved at the standard rate. And so I think that, again, we have to get down to specifics when we start talking the problem. There is one question I'd like to ask the chair, however, and I'm sorry I cannot determine it from here, and that is, does this current version provide for the buyback of product in the event that the dealer were to cancel a annual agreement? And I apologize for having to ask this question.
Mr. Newman, Representative Newman, do you have the answer for that, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. On the buyback of product section, the reason for that was to a lot of times they can change numbers on a part, and the manufacturers change numbers, and you don't receive that otherwise. And so, and it's the same part. And I know that happened to me personally. I went in to buy a shock for my snowmobile, and what they did is there was three different numbers on there. Well, I got charged the highest rate for whatever number they wanted on there. But there's a buyback in there. And what it does is mostly in Alaska, too, is if the dealer goes out of business, they're spread out through the state, and that's trying to help cover those costs.
All right. Thank you, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. I will try to keep this very brief then. When we hear a discussion about risk, there's a tremendous amount of risk for the manufacturer. If the product that he has sold to the dealer, he is forced to buy back three-year-old boats on 30 days' notice. That allows no risk for inventory decisions by the dealer, no risk on his decisions to stock certain parts or the amount of parts. Also, when they talk about the ability to cancel, arbitrary cancellation, there is arbitrary cancellation retained in the bill for the dealer. It says that he may cancel, given in the version I saw, 60 days notice, with or without cause. The manufacturer must develop some sort of cause, even though cause is not defined at all in the bill. So there is, again, a total shifting of rights and responsibility and risk in this bill. As far as it being anything near a franchise system or somehow reflecting the automobile franchise system, there are two separate industries, and this bill has basically cherry-picked the pro-dealer aspects of anything in a franchise law and ignored the equality that a franchise law attempts to provide to both parties. In addition, as far as, and I'm sorry, I've just been scratching through my testimony trying to get to the...
I need to give you 1 minute to finish up. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you very much. As far as the transfer, well, as far as renewal of the contract, right now we've seen a 13% decline in sales last year. We expect the same next year because of the economy. If a boat dealer decides that he needs to sell his business, under this law, if that buyer is a valid buyer, there is no out that a manufacturer has in saying, My market pressures forced me to leave this marketplace. I simply cannot afford to retain representation in an area that has very, very low sales. Times are very tight. This bill would absolutely prevent him from taking that action, and I think that's incredibly unfair to the free market process and does not reflect what actually happens in the marketplace. I'll be delighted to provide specific line-by-line comments as soon as I get a copy of the bill, and I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, David. May I have your fax number, please?
Yes, ma'am. Let's see. My fax number is 786-276-2711.
And if I heard you correctly, you are opposed to the bill?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. Dudley, are you still with us?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, Chairman, I guess in this case the Vice Chairman and distinguished members of the committee, my name is Dudley Benish, and I am one of the owners of a boat, snowmobile, and ATV dealership in Anchorage that I started over 30 years ago. I've cut, to keep this very brief, I've cut about half of my testimony because I see we're running out of time. But I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to provide testimony today. Simply put, House Bill 303 is truly necessary to protect the Alaskan consumers and the small businesses. The manufacturers and the marine industry and the power sports industry have created over time, you know, these very one-sided dealer agreements with all the conditions and everything written on them in their favor. I mean, it's their legal departments that put it together. It's 100% basically written for them. In addition to that, you know, you look at, they set the allowable warranty labor pay rates. They set the flat rate times, the repair times. They have all the written policies for all of the defective products and all of the warranty repairs. It's all written by the manufacturer. The dealer has absolutely no input whatsoever on that. And you have boilerplate that you get. And you have, as a dealer, you get the contract. It's one size fits all, and that's the way it goes. Seven states have already passed, you know, legislation. They've said enough is enough. And they passed legislation that addresses similar issues as House Bill 303. And contrary to what earlier testimony said, ATVs have definitely had similar legislation. The Louisiana legislation covers ATVs absolutely the same as the boats in its Motor Vehicle Act. Also, Montana, which we haven't even talked about, has specific legislation actually aimed at ATVs and snowmobiles that has a lot of the same things. So we're not trying to reinvent a wheel here. What we are trying to do is come up with something that protects the Alaskan consumers and the small businesses here from literally some of the practices of what manufacturers are doing out there. Why does House Bill 303 do that creates such fear in the manufacturers that, you know, they hire the top dollar lobbyists, they'll try any parliamentary procedure they can and you know, have their testimony to try and stop it or delay it. Very simply, it requires them to bear the burden of the cost for their design defects and the manufacturing defects that the manufacturers create. House Bill 303 will require them to be more fair and equitable in their treatment of Alaskan consumers and dealers. And you know, in a bottom line, that's basically it. It's all about fair play and coming up with something that gives the dealer and the consumer in Alaska the ability to get what they're paying for when you know the warranty-wise and when you buy a product and it should do what you're buying it for and what the manufacturer is promoting it as. And with that, I appreciate the time to do the testimony, and I'm open here.
Mr. Benish, thank you so much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Next, we have Buster Hall on the line. Buster, if you could identify your name and affiliation, please.
Thank you. I'm Buster Hall. I happen to be the president of the Alaska Marine Dealers Association. I also own Buster's Professional Upholstery and do custom boat tops. 49-year resident of Alaska and 18-year board member of AMDA. The AMDA was organized as a not-for-profit association to help dealers work together, not only for the Anchors Away Boat Show, but other areas as needed. Over the years, dealers and manufacturer problems have been a well-talked-over subject. As other states have passed legislation to help dealers with manufacturers, the board put together a committee to start and move forward with legislation for Alaska. It has been great to see not only boat dealers, but ATV and snow machine dealers also wanting to help and have signed on with their support. When House Bill 303 is passed, I think the real winners will be the consumers of Alaska. Thank you for giving me time to speak about my support of House Bill 303 on behalf of AMDA and myself.
Thank you, Mr. I appreciate it. Is there anyone in the room or anyone else online that no one has signed in to testify, but is there anyone that has slipped in and wishes to testify? All right. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. Representative Gruenberg, you have a question?
Yes, question really for any of the association representatives nationally who are on the line, including but not limited to council. Are you aware of any court cases anywhere that have construed the question in these contracts, and I'm talking contracts of inclusion, between manufacturer and dealer, and have held whether or not they are really contracts of adhesion and therefore to be most strictly construed against the drafter of the contracts that any of you are aware of?
Is that to a specific person, Representative Gruenberg?
No, anybody in the panel, in the group.
Could I, since I'm not hearing anybody jumping in real quickly, ask anyone who has a response to that if they could put it in writing and submit it to the committee for tomorrow, that would be great. What we are going to do, because of the other scheduled meetings and things that need to transpire in this building, we are going to recess until 1 o'clock tomorrow. Public testimony has been closed. Those of you who dialed in are welcome to dial in and listen again tomorrow. If you have questions, you are more than welcome to call Representative Newman's office or Jane Pearson, who's a legislative aide for Representative Ramirez, and her direct number is 4652.
That's her fax number.
I apologize. Her fax number is 4652070, and you could fax your questions directly to her. And I have three people, Kathy, Paul, and David, who are requesting faxes of the current version. I'm sure Representative Newman's office will take care of that. And I have a request that all amendments be drafted by Ledge Legal and turned in to the committee aid here in Ledge in Judiciary by 11 a.m. tomorrow, as much as possible. I mean, we realize Ledge Legal is backed up, so as much as possible. So with that, we are going to adjourn until
recess.
I apologize. I did state that we are recessing until 1 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you.